Welcome to the Horror Friendly Podcast.
It's not over since that bitch is dead.
Let's delve into that a bit deeper.
I'm going to be like the peacekeeper between you two tonight.
Don't fuck with the original.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Horror Friendly Podcast, part of the You Run Podcast Network. My name is Katie, and I am joined by Charlie and Chantel.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Charlie is back, but sounds like the Wheezy toy from Toy Story.
Just about. Hey, that's all that matters.
She could be Payman from this film.
No, I'm not going.
King of Hell, whatever it is.
He's never quite there, but always kind of there.
Mm. I'm the pigeon king, or whatever it is.
Fucking...
I'm sorry. Is Charlie here?
Why are you scared of me?
What? I never wanted to be your mother.
Why?
I was scared. I didn't feel like a mother. But she pressured me.
Then why did you have me?
It wasn't my fault. I tried to stop it.
Right, well, we've already given it away, but this week we are doing the 2018 Hereditary. So when the matriarch of the Graham family passes away, her daughter and grandchildren begin to unravel cryptic and increasingly terrifying secrets about their ancestry, trying to outrun the sinister fate they have inherited. I can't remember who suggested this one. Katie, for first thoughts, first experience?
Yeah, so I watched this in the cinema when it came out. I absolutely loved it, like, from the get-go, really. It was really fucking intense watching it in the cinema because so much shit happens and so much trauma happens. And all the little Easter eggs that you sort of see throughout the film and in the dark corners and things like that, it was really scary watching it in the cinema. And it fucked with me for a long time. Like, I couldn't watch this film until we had to watch it for the podcast. Like, I just didn't, I couldn't like mentally prepare myself to watch it. It just took a lot out of me, like mentally. So yeah, I hadn't watched this since I watched it in the cinema. but yeah, I fucking love this film. It just takes a lot out of me.
Was it as scary watching it at home as it was in the cinema?
Not quite. Like, it still was pretty scary because I forgot like a lot of what happens because I hadn't really kind of like sort of seen any kind of clips or anything. Like, I don't know, it is one of those films that like you don't have to, it's better if you, the less you know the better, sort of like going into it. But like, it was still pretty fucking awful and like fucked up, but yeah, in the cinema it just hit different. But yeah, no, I still had a really good time like coming back to it. But yes, have you seen this film before?
We have spoken about this several times, and we spoke about it when we did Midsommar, I believe, and I was deliberately holding off until we did it for the podcast, because I wanted fresh perspective. So my first time watching it was yesterday. I can see why it would have been incredibly intense in the cinema, and I kind of wish I'd done. I have like my Sunday routine of like, I get home from derby training, beaten to shit, I'm like Epsom salt bath and I literally watch the film in the bath. So I'm in quite a calm environment anyway. But like,
oh my God.
Even for me, do you know how much hot water I had to re-add to the bath? Because it's such a fucking long film. It was a goddamn raisin. I was a fucking raisin by the time I got out. I was like, I actually had to stop it, get out and then like carry it on. It's so fucking long. And I think the really, really intense bits are good, but it's too fucking long. And it's, yeah, I don't know. I expected to love it from everyone. Everyone I talked to about this is like, yeah, it's a really scary film, really great. And I was just like, And again, I don't know what my problem is lately. I'm just not loving many of the horror films. And I'm gonna
She's moving over to Skyfy, lad. You've heard it here first.
I don't know what's happening, but I'm going to throw it to Charlie, because was it your first time watching this yesterday as well?
No.
Okay.
This was my second time watching it.
Okay.
I have to say, I didn't love it as much as what I did the first time I saw it.
Okay.
First time I saw it, it was at home again. This time I watched it by myself. I've forgotten all about the ending. I don't know how that, like, I forgot about that, because I remember at the time, like, that being such a big thing for me. But yeah, this time around, I didn't love it as much as what I did the first time. So I would love to watch this again properly as well. But yeah, I don't know. It just didn't, I didn't have the same amount of love for it. But then I did notice little Easter eggs this time around, which I hadn't have noticed before. So yeah, it was it's a weird relationship with this film. Like at the time, like when I first saw it, would have rated it. And even up until like yesterday morning, I was still saying to my mum, like, oh, you need to watch this film. It's really good. It's right up your street. But then, yeah, after watching it, I was a bit like, okay, yeah, my mum would still like it. But I don't think I'd go out of my way to really sort of recommend it in the way that I have, like Midsommar, for example. Obviously, one of his other films that came out at the time and things. So, yeah, I've got mixed feelings on this one.
I don't really know where to go from there, really, because it is just, I think, such a fucking weird film. I mean, when you start at the beginning, that funeral was weird. Like, but I think it shows you so much. And I do like that he does this, and he did it again in, like, Midsommar and stuff, and he's done it in a few films, where you can see how, I've already forgotten Toni Collette's character's name, but how she was talking about, sorry, Annie. Annie was talking about her mum, and that whole speech at the funeral shows they didn't have a close relationship, shows her mum was very secretive, and it tells you so much in a very short scene. So I did like that. I love the daughter just pulling the chocolate bar out of her pocket and eating it like a piece of bread.
Has it got nuts in?
I know. I love that they checked the chocolate that was in her pocket. Like, where did she get it from? If I think she brought it with her, like, unless she stole it off a snack table. I don't know. Like, I don't know what they were thinking, but it just made me laugh. The grinning mourner was a bit weird.
Yeah, that was creepy.
So you've always got to have some sort of creep at a funeral, though. Oh wait.
I mean, if you're not the creep, if you can't spot the creep, you probably are the creep. But
yeah, it's when you run a satanic cult, you always got to have a weirdo in there.
But again, we don't know anything about the satanic cult yet. So,
we don't.
Yeah, yeah. Who would have suspected the satanic cult had weirdos in it? Right? it's over the Satan bit. It's the cult part.
Yeah, it was quite cool how they built it up, because like she was like, oh, I don't, basically she was saying that she didn't recognise half the people that were at the funeral.
Yeah.
And so already you kind of think that, okay, her mum's got a lot of secrets, and how she's got like her box of her mum's things, and like she doesn't even want to go through them, because it's almost like she doesn't want to know, like she doesn't want to find out anything sketchy about her mum.
Yeah, I think it's almost like she knew enough, like she knew their relationship wasn't good. And again, we hear more about it later, but she didn't she didn't need to look through it to know they didn't have a good relationship. Yeah. I did like when she asked her husband, if should I be mourning more or should I be more upset? And I think that's a very real feeling that people get. Even if people are heartbroken, they can still feel like they're not mourning enough. So I thought that was just very smart, very cleverly added.
Yeah.
I think as well, like Toni Collette, she absolutely slays this role. Like, I'm just going to put that out. Yeah. Like, she is this movie for me personally. And I think she tells the story very well. And this, like, she is probably one of the film's biggest assets. Her and Wolf,
Alex Wolf, is that the son?
Yeah, Peter.
Yeah, Alex Wolf.
See, don't be wrong, he was brilliant, but he didn't look like the rest of the family. Was it just me? Because it was like when he was with Charlie, I was like, they don't look like brother and sister. And I know when you're casting for a film, you're never going to get it spot on, but I was just like, they are very different. They don't look related whatsoever.
But I think that sort of plays into the role of it because they approach things so differently as well.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe it was a deliberate choice, but I did. I just kept.
I know what you mean. Like, it's like,
it's the party scene. You know?
Like,
well, yeah, I was like, maybe a different dad. Like, and again, not judging, but it was never confirmed.
Maybe denied. Annie's shagged the postman or something.
Yeah. But there was an age gap. There might have been a previous husband. Like, so, well, but it was just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, sorry. It's like, I was kind of going on from that. I read somewhere, but I don't think it's insinuated in the film, but that he was her former therapist and that's how they met. But is that actually in the film? Well,
it's a deleted scene.
Oh, okay. So
it's a deleted scene that he's because it goes into his job being a therapist and everything. It was a deleted scene. I did a little bit of research on that.
Ooh.
And it does dive into that bit.
Definite conflict of interest to that one.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Like,
But also with Charlie, like, I expected her to be in the film quite a bit longer, considering she's on the cover.
45 or 48 minutes, I think she lasted. Like, which is funny that, when you're saying that she.
But
wasn't
I guess
in
she's very important.
Long.
She's very important to the whole film. She doesn't have to be it the whole time, I guess.
Same with Grandma. Actually, she was very important to the film without actually being present. But considering she was on the poster, I was so expecting, like, her. Yeah, I was just expecting her to come back. I was expecting, like, Pet Sematary vibes going on. Because as you said, Katie, I think it's good to go in there into this without knowing a lot. So I tried to know as little as possible. Yeah. So I had no idea it was going to be a satanic cult. That was a fucking left turn for me at the end. Like,
sort of family drama.
But this was it.
We've all got our secrets.
Yeah, right? But for most of the film, it was a really heartbreaking human horror where this family were dealing with a shit ton of grief and then horrible situations literally within their close knit. And when Toni Collette, I'm going to keep calling her that rather than Annie, when Annie breaks at the dinner table, that's so fucking real. And that's so upsetting. And you feel that in your soul. But it's. And then it just takes this left turn. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
Mm-hmm.
Where did the fucking cult come? It was so funny. I was like, what happened here?
I think it's interesting because it definitely, I mean, grief is the main factor of this. And it was also the main sort of subject of Midsommar as well. I think Ari Aster has like some sort of thing with cults and grief. But it explores it in like what people and families do just to try and find, so I guess, not maybe an escape, but a way through and dealing with their grief. And I think this is, again, like it's another, obviously we saw Midsommar, she goes off and explores and wants to go traveling. This one is like, well, actually, my daughter is too young. Let's try and find a way to talk to her. Obviously, we don't know that she's been guided into that way. But, like, it is a thing that people do and believe in and want to explore.
Yeah, it's harder when it's shoved down your throat. That's what you should do.
Manipulated.
But also she does, like, she makes the miniatures and she's like, oh, it's an unbiased point of view of the crash. And I'm like...
I mean, the crash scene, like...
Yeah, I said, we'll come back to that, but like her way of coping by recreating her daughter's death, I was like, I understand people grieve in different ways, but even your psychiatrist husband is like, that's fucked up. If our son sees that, that's going to be fucking a lifetime of therapy. Like,
good job that his dad's a therapist, isn't it? Save him a bit of money there.
God, like, just an interesting way to... cope.
And it's also like, even like forgetting about the satanic cult bit, but like Joan, who she like makes friends with and shows her how she connected with her grandson and her son, and obviously she had an ulterior motive to obviously try and summon payment, but like she completely just exploited like Charlie's death in order for, and like Charlie was saying, our Charlie is saying, like, it's crazy, like, the lengths that people go, when you are in deep grief, like, the lengths that people will go to do that. And it's just so sad that, like, Annie was the one that kind of, like, essentially summoned this demon because she wanted to reach out to her daughter.
She told me to read this and I read it. What language is it in? I think never, that's everyone's.
Never read.
Vibe. Don't.
Don't read the fucking Latin.
Put the book down, Annie. Annie, are honestly, you okay?
It's funny you say about, like, exploiting her death, but they actually caused her death because when you see that lamppost, it's got their symbol on it.
Yes.
So somehow they set it up. Like, they must have put the deer carcass there. And who the fuck cuts nuts at a party? Like,
but is it a chocolate cake?
There were a fuck ton of nuts as well.
There were a fuck ton of nuts to go into that one cake. And also, that cake had already been baked. So I don't even know if the nuts were in it or if it's because they used the same knife. Like, there were so many scenarios.
Just squashed them in there.
Just get in the fucking cake.
Like, if you're highly sensitive to nuts, like, they even put out announcements on aeroplanes. Like, there was someone, there's a passenger on board. Please put your nuts away.
Yeah.
Like... prepare for takeoff.
I've worked with people who it's like it's an air forgot the word, but yeah, you can literally catch it from nuts being in the air.
Airborne,
thank you.
That's mad.
And it's fucking, it's it, literally there's such a severity to it, but like I do hate as well, I know we're going to get to her death in a second, but before the death, when the son is asking to go to the party and he obviously blags it to barbecue. One, parents just accept you went to parties as kids, let your teenager go to some parties. But also, why do parents insist on the older sibling taking the sibling who is significantly younger to the same fucking party, barbecue, I don't care, event?
So they can get laid.
No, she just needed time to herself. But, sorry, no. Like, that fucking 13-year-old didn't want to be there. It was going to be a party for his year group. Why would you want your 13-year-old hanging out with a bunch of 16, 17-year-olds anyway? Mm. Like, stop doing this.
And she did kind of think that she said, like, oh, there is going to be alcohol. Like, she, even when Peter said there wasn't going to be, like, she knew there was going to be. So why would she want Charlie going there anyway?
Yeah. Like, I know she wanted a break, but I do hate, we do see this, like, a lot in, or, like, films, but you see it in life as well, where it's like, the first question is Charlie going? Like, what? Your sibling doesn't
obviously
have to go to...
I have social anxiety.
But also, yeah. But, like, the sibling doesn't have to go to everything together, especially when there's an age gap. Because, like, me and my siblings, we went to a lot of shit together, but we're all, like, 18 months apart. So there was a lot of crossover.
Yeah, for me and my sister, like, she's 4 years younger than me.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing is probably the same sort of age difference as this. Like, I think if my mum had been like, I was going with you, I'd be like, fuck off.
Yeah, well, when we were 17, can you enjoy?
And also, like, me and my sister have never sort of been close or into the same thing as well, much like Alex and Charlie and this. So, yeah, I think I, like, if my parents had been like, oh, you're taking your sister, I'd be like, no. No, I'm not.
But I feel like Alex was a good brother because he was like, give me a couple of minutes and then we'll hang out. I'll come draw with you. So, like, he knew what she was interested in and he knew how to be a good brother. He just wanted time to himself. Yeah. And I think that's perfectly acceptable. Like,
yeah, like Millie Shapiro, who played Charlie in it, she said, she was like, oh, well, I think, like, Charlie likes Peter the most because, like, he kind of gets her and kind of just lets her get on with it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Annie is, like, trying to be like, oh, you can make friends this way and you can do that. And she's just chill. I mean, she's a bit creepy, but she's just chill. Like, cutting off
she's possessed by a demon.
And, you know, just drawing and doing whatever she's doing. But, and I think Peter kind of gets that a bit more, like, than maybe her parents do. So they seem like they have a bit more of a mutual understanding.
Yeah, he's like, look, my sister's a creepy kid. That's fine.
Yeah,
just like let her do her thing. Like,
yeah.
Leave her.
Did you just say about cutting the head off of the pigeon?
I did.
Yeah. Because that
pair of scissors.
One, no classroom pair of scissors is that fucking tough. Like,
they're talking about America, mate. They've got fucking guns.
Yeah, exactly. They've
pair
got
of
guns.
Scissors isn't going to be shit.
They've got guns, but no fucking Kinder eggs because they've got their priorities in the wrong order. The pair of scissors in the classroom are going to be blunt as fuck. Like, that's just fact, I'm afraid. So when it started going through the pigeon, I was like, I just don't believe it. Just don't buy it at all. But I did love that, obviously, she had an obsession with cutting off the pigeon's head and the toys. She was always playing with the heads.
Well, it comes in later, obviously, like the bird, yeah. Lord, king. And also, like, the noise that she's making.
Oh, the cluck.
Yeah. The cluck. What do pigeons and birds and fucking chickens do? They cluck. And I've read, like, a theory online as well that because she is possessed, maybe that is, like, actual Charlie in her trying to make a sound. And that's what the demon then mimics, like, later on. Like, oh, look, she was helpless, and this is her trying to make it known that she was not in a great place. But, yeah.
I did like that when Peter did it, because obviously it was such a clear indication that Charlie was now with him. I don't know, I just thought that was really subtle, but really good. But, yes, we can go back to the party and her...
oh god,
with chocolate cake.
She did act really well.
Jesus Christ.
The allergy.
She fucking smashed her role as well. Like,
unintended.
I mean, I'm not sure if that's a bit of a car crash pun there or we've got to talk about that scene. How can we not? What's worse, that scene or the scene the morning after?
Well, so that was the thing. I was like, obviously, it kind of all happens very quickly. It's like, I mean, it doesn't. They're in the car for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all of a sudden, oh, shit, poll done. I think his reaction afterwards was done really well, where he was sat there frozen. But once he, what the fuck was he doing? Like, then when he just took himself
he stopped.
Home. No, I know he stunned, and I know he was in shock, but the fact that he just took himself home and then laid there for like 8 hours wide awake waiting for her to be found. But yeah, just like, it wasn't going to be better waiting 8 hours. Like, I know it was night and he needed to sober up, but
yeah, like, I just don't think he knew what to fucking do. Yeah. And apparently Ari Aster, he loves to just focus the camera on someone's face for like minutes. Alex Wolff was like, I had to just keep going. And he's a method actor, Alex Wolff. So he made Ari call him Peter the entire time they were on set. So he was like fully invested in his character. And he said like the whole experience isn't something he'd ever do again, but he was so glad he did it. But like, yeah, so he was focused so much on his face. And I thought it made it kind of more shocking than when he just kind of like just drove off. Because everyone would just be like, wait, what the fuck are you doing? But then he knows what's happened. So he's like, I don't need to look. I just need to, I just want to fucking get home. He doesn't think about anything in the future. It's just what he wants to do right now.
No, true. That's like, actually, that's a good way of saying it. It's like, that's what he needed right then was bed, just to lay. You say, though, that he knew what happened. He didn't need to hear look. But I actually had to wait for confirmation because I was like, I don't know if her head's been taken off or if she's been pulled out the window. Like, I wasn't sure.
You don't know.
You don't know until the next morning and you see the ant-infested head, which was fucking beautiful. But...
stunning.
Something tells me. I saw it and I was like, Tel's going to have a bit to say about that.
I know. I was like, Tel's going to have a field day with this film.
I hadn't even in my head been like, it's going to be, I was like, whatever we see is going to be gross. Yeah, it's going to be gross. I hadn't actually considered bugs and ants. And I was like, that is such a good fucking touch. Because you only ever really see that in films if it's like a dug up or a really old body. So the fact it happened in like 8 hours, I was like, fuck, that's beautiful. Like, that is absolutely stunning. Oh, it was great. Loved it.
I think as well, like, it's not even like a quick flash on the head. It's like a good like five seconds plus. Like, you get to see fucking damage getting done there.
Yeah. But as I think you said as well about Annie's scream, I loved as well that that scream went on for like three scenes and it just tied them all together. I thought that was fucking incredible and so, perfect. Yeah, so powerful.
Mm. Like gut-wrenching as well. Like that was like, that wasn't even like a, that was like a, like pain.
That wasn't acting. That was someone who lost a child. That was heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And the scene where the dad's like trying to console her and she's just on the floor. Okay. And then it just pans to Peter's face. Yeah. And just him listening. And all of that was hard because then you would see like Peter coming home from school and he would be like hyping himself up to come into the house because he's like, I can't face my mum. Like I can't face her. I can't talk about this.
What do you think the first, do you reckon that dinner table scene was the first time he had spoken to his mum about it?
I wonder, like properly.
Like, I don't know because she said, when she screamed at him, she said something like, you haven't even apologised or you keep making snarky comments. So I think they had kind of talked, but I don't think they'd spoken. I think there'd been like passing comments or they'd been in the same room as each other. the cat's back. But I don't...
Like...
Yeah, but the fact she was like, you haven't even apologised, I couldn't believe that because, again, you could see Peter didn't mean to do it. And again, she's like, I know it was an accident, but she's still gone. And it's like, he was as broken as everyone else, but he couldn't grieve. He couldn't. And again, because he's blaming himself, he's survivor's guilt. And I was so upset for Peter. Like, because again, we saw his side. We knew he didn't mean to do it. He was trying to save her, not kill her. And so, yeah, I assume there'd been like little bits, but he was probably out of like... fear and probably trying to defend himself that he was probably making snarky comments before his mom could say anything just to be like, you already hate me, I'll make you hate me more, like blame me. Like it was probably that, it was probably like putting himself down.
Yeah, there's probably a lot going on
in
that house, like lots of complicated emotions, like, and like she said, now I can't forget and now I can't forgive, because she's almost saying like it's too late now, like you've not said, and she said, oh, I wish we could do something with this, like looking at the family, and it's so sad.
But like, why is the husband saying nothing? Like, it was his kid as well. That's what, and I know, again, people grieve differently, but he is so, maybe that is his way of grieving, actually, is to look after his family, and he just doesn't know what to say. And it's heartbreaking.
He's still got to be there for his son as well. Like, he, obviously, it's traumatic for him because he is the one who has essentially killed his sister. Because of his actions. Okay, it was an accident. It's a bit like, I was actually watching a documentary on it. There was a serial killer in the USA and he was 13 and he killed his 5-year-old sister. And the mum was like, the only way, the mum was still in contact with his son despite the fact that he was in prison, despite the fact that he had killed his sister. Because his reasoning was, I didn't want to lose both children.
I do know the one you mean. And I cannot remember the
psychopath case. Like, he's got an IQ of like 150%. Ridiculous. Yeah. I guess it's that, though. He doesn't want to lose both children. Neither of them want to lose both children.
No. But I think that is it, isn't it? It's the dad's trying to hold it together for everyone. But yeah, you don't really see him mourning. But again, I guess that's such a complicated feeling to be mourning one child while trying to look after the other kid that's at fault, and it's very complicated. Yeah.
I guess as well, it's like stereotypically men tend to bottle up their emotions, and obviously we've always seen it like it was the mother-in-law as well. So it wasn't like it was anyone, especially if she was estranged from the mum, like it's not anyone super close to him, so he can sort of step back. So he hasn't had that sort of double hit of grief. All he's had is like a double hit of his wife grieving and his own grief now with his daughter.
I don't know. I think I would have liked to see him grieve a little bit, because as you say, like, men are always expected to be really stoic in that. And I'm like, I don't care that he was a therapist. Like, he wasn't being the therapist of the family. Again, it should be okay to see men upset on screen.
Yeah.
So.
No, I get that.
You saw a few bits, like he was in Charlie's room at one scene and he was looking through her notepad. And then there was another scene where he picked Peter up from high school, and then he just broke down in the car, and then the lights turned to green and he was still just sat in the car, like,
yeah.
But that was also, that wasn't just to do with Charlie though from that point. That was also because so much shit happened from that point.
Yeah.
Slamming okay, yeah. his face into the desk and breaking his nose and all that bollocks. But like,
oh, fucking hell, I forgot about that bit.
You are right, actually. He did break a couple of times. But it was that, wasn't it? He was always grieving on his own, but probably because he couldn't speak in front of anyone.
Yeah.
And he thought Annie was sick and that she was like having a breakdown, basically.
Hey there, listeners. Are you looking for something a bit different this month? Why not check out
From the Banks of Dewey Lake, it's the Dewey Pod Monster.
They're the original consumption podcast, so they cover things from films, even beer at one point. So why not check them out? They are covering a few films this month, including Dawn of the Dead, Roadhouse, and Iron Claw. So give them a listen. That's Dewey Pod Monster, also part of the U-Run network.
But yeah, like, I think it was a very accurate perception of grief, all of that, that Annie went through. And just, can hard watch. A lot mentally, just a lot. It was a lot for me, old brain. I'll say that.
I bet you walk out of this. I say I bet as if I haven't watched it, but I bet you walk out of this and just like, oh, I need a drink. Like,
yeah, I need a very strong beverage right now.
Just very heavy. But I'm trying to think what happens. Other like, okay, so you've got like the woman then tries to convince her to do a seance.
Joan.
And then there's some like other clues and stuff before we get to the satanic cult, but I'm trying to fill in the blanks.
We keep seeing like that symbol and there's a necklace. Mm. Also, I'm not sure if it was an Easter egg or not, but the doormat that she had, and she had them for the things, it was in the same colours as the one from Midsummer's. It was white and stitched. Like, I don't know whether that was on purpose or not, but I was like, oh, that's a bit Midsummer, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know if it's on purpose, but yeah, we see that. And then obviously it all kicks off with the son and her. Then you see like the book was drawing in itself.
Yeah, that was cool.
And we also have him smacking his head at school as well. Like, it's all just very weird.
Yeah, like when just going back to the Annie and Peter, like their relationship, because Annie kind of like goes into it a bit more about how she sleptwalked once and she found herself paint thinner all over her and her kids. And, you know, I can't blame Peter, to be fair. Like, I think that would cause a bit of a fractious fucking relationship with me and my mum if she did that to me.
Yeah.
I blame Peter for that, really.
And also we're inside one of her dreams as well, where she is basically saying, I should have.
That was scary, that bit.
And you see like the shock on her face, like she covers over her mouth. But then she keeps saying, it's like she can't stop herself.
Mm. Yeah, like, I never wanted to be your mum. And then she's like,
oh my God. And then says even more. And it's still just like shocked that it's going out of her mouth. And then turns out it's a dream.
Yeah, she's like, am I the drama? I don't think I'm the drama.
Am I the problem?
Yes, you are.
Hi, I'm the problem.
Annie,
it's me.
Yes, you are.
I would say go to therapy, but your husband's already married you. So,
yeah.
I mean, apparently it worked very well the first time. Like,
how to find a boyfriend, go to therapy.
Just hope the boyfriend also goes to therapy, not as a therapist.
I take that as no digs.
Not a therapist, but like, preferably not your own. Again, conflict of interest.
Just a little bit.
Just a little. But yeah,
no, it's probably a bit too much.
Mm. Yeah, he's like, no, sorry, you need to get to know me as a normal person before you learn all my secrets.
Oh my God, I know. Like, literally, if you started dating your therapist, they would know all your like deepest, darkest fucking. And maybe that would be all right. And then you're not hiding anything from them. But like,
absolutely not.
Yeah, but that's not supposed to take years to come out.
Exactly.
But at least like the sixth date. Like.
So this is all my baggage. What do you want to do with it?
Yeah.
Can you lift it or do I need to move on?
Yeah, yeah. We don't care what you look like underneath your clothes, and it's all about can you deal with the problem?
I will stand by that, though. Like, I think, because I was, oh my God, we've gone so off topic. But like, if someone's bad in bed, they can learn to be better, especially when you're with them, like, as a partner, you can show them what you like. But if they're not good at like emotional stuff, they're not going to magically learn how to be good with emotional stuff.
I feel so seen right now.
But
shitty ex-boyfriends, if you're listening.
Yeah, that would be really fucking weird. Stop stalking, move on, get a fucking life. If you are listening to your ex-girlfriend's podcast, you're a walking red flag. Fuck off.
Yeah, you don't have to be interested in what she does anymore. Just yeah. Leave her alone.
At that point, are you the problem? Yes, go away.
Yeah, I am the problem.
Wow, we've been so off topic.
Yes.
This is our therapy. That's the problem.
God,
that is the problem.
Our poor listeners.
You are our therapist.
Well, Tell has literally told all the listeners her deepest, darkest fears, like eyes and
so
all
these times.
Things. So, like, I remember you saying before, Tell, like, if there are any fucking serial killers that listen to this podcast, you are absolutely fucked.
They're going for your eyes first, mate.
And now they know. Yeah, now they're going to have to get to me emotionally. Six dates, I said.
And if you're shit at sex, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, literally, you don't even have to be good. I'll be like,
it's all right, they'll have your eyes out on dates.
You've made it very easy, sir.
I've made it so easy. Maybe I should stop being. Maybe I'm the easy problem.
Am I the drama?
It's okay.
Anyway.
We see, like, clues for most of the film, and then it just feels like that last 15 minutes everything hits the fan. But like kind of out of nowhere.
Well, we see her set on fire when she originally tries to throw the little notebook away.
Yeah,
so we know, okay, we don't burn this notebook because it's gonna hurt you more than it's gonna hurt the notebook. But obviously, like, yeah, like a lot happens in a short amount of time. Where do we start?
Well, I think it kind of starts, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it starts with Peter, because when he sees the light and he starts following it, like the light, the orb, whatever you want to call it, that is Payman, he sort of like follows it and sees it when he's in class. And that's when obviously he smashes his face into the table. And it's kind of all just kicking off from there. And you see like Payman kind of sort of possessing them, but not quite as much as he does with Peter at the end. Mm. But like, getting into their skin a little bit. And also, Alex Wolff, he can actually dislocate his jaw because he dislocated it years ago. So he actually physically dislocated it for the role. He was like, it hurts so much, but it was worth it to get that shot.
It looks so good. It looked like, you think it's CGI. I didn't know that was real. That's mental.
I love that one day he was just like, they were like, so we need to make you look creepy. And he's just like, I've got an idea.
Yeah. His commitment is fucking mad.
That is some insane commitment.
I know. But yeah, so I think it starts with Peter. And then obviously, as Charlie says, like when Annie throws it into the fire, you think that Annie's going to set on fire. And then the poor fucking dad gets it.
Well yeah, because she goes up into the loft at some point as well and obviously discovers her mother's body, but can't tell it's her mum's body because it's, oh my God, just rotten. Like flies, everything, and that fucking symbol again.
With no head. This is my biggest gripe with this film, though, is how the fuck could nobody smell a dead body literally above them?
Well, we find out, like, I think it's in one of the first scenes after the death of a body, like, they're called up and it's the husband that takes the call.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, fuck, like,
her grave's been desecrated?
Yeah. It's like, it's only been a week.
If that, like, it was ridiculously quick. And again, that was probably, that was the cult members and it was taking them up there. Because I think as well, you can hear, so when they get back from the funeral, you hear footsteps. So you can, like, hear them up there. But again, how did you not notice the smell? It's literally above your head. Actually, I think the husband mentions the smell.
Yeah, like, they mentioned a few times.
But I mean, I know there's a lot else going on and they're grieving, but that smell would get really fucking rotten very quickly. Also, when she opens the loft, there's like thousands of flies, maybe not thousands, but it feels like they're small, so maybe thousands. Like, that's not a few amount of flies that you'd have heard them buzzing. Also, you don't go and just walk up into the attic. Like, if there were that many flies, I'd be like, nah, I'm calling whoever for help. Like,
yeah. I think as well, like, when we've seen like other paranormal movies, like The Conjuring, for example, they talk about the smell and how it smells like rotten flesh and things. So I guess it's sort of playing on that, like, obviously they do mention the fact that it stinks in the house. So I guess it is giving that feeling. It's like, oh, fucking ghosts of some shit in there, isn't there? I guess we just put the fire on, put a bit of incense on, some fucking Yankee candles.
Yankee candle. God, fucking poisonous smell of those would get rid of a smell of rotting flesh, that's for sure.
The anti-corpse one you want.
the
anti-corpse, mate.
They're just...
But there is the one bit where Annie's dreaming and she dreams that Peter's covered completely in flies.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that's kind of like, maybe it's linked in some way that she kind of has a premonition about it. Like she kind of knew subconsciously about it.
There is lots of orbs and lots of shadows in this movie, moving between the characters. And I can't remember if there's anything, any of them in that scene, but I feel like there is. Just because they seem to show up all the time by that point. And then the red lights in the treehouse as well.
Mm. There was a couple I was really proud to spot, because again, sometimes you need to, like, the second or third time to watch to see them. But it was when Annie knocks over the paint, but she doesn't knock it over, she doesn't touch it, but you see the shimmer in the background. And the other one is like Peter, he's sat next to his window and like breathes out the window. But there's breathing on the left-hand side of the screen. And I was so glad that I saw them, because I was like, normally you'd have to watch a film like two or three times. And I was like, fuck yeah, I got it first time round.
I mentioned the paint one. That's awesome.
Yeah. And there's also, they talk about like the air flexing around them as well.
But as well, it's funny that Peter felt that a lot more than the dad, because payment's after him, because it's hereditary and he's just married into the family. Just.
Yeah, and he is a male host.
And that's what Payman wants, isn't it, male host?
Also, I think Ari Aster does that so well, where, like, in Midsommar, I know Midsommar came out after, but, like, in the trees and stuff, when we were talking about it in our episode, when you could see, like, the mum and the oxygen mask and all of that, and all these kind of hidden things. And I know I'm going a bit ahead of myself, but when Annie's possessed, and I don't know if you guys noticed it, but when Peter wakes up in bed and you can see her in the corner of the...
Yeah!
Literally, actually, I've never been so fucking scared.
I actually didn't see her straight away. I saw her when she ran.
Yeah, so that moved. The first time I watched the movie, that's when I saw her. And I was like, you know, when it thinks something's a bit weird, because earlier on we see what we think is Charlie in his room. And it's not, it's like a shirt on like a back of a chair. And then we do see Charlie in his room. But Annie's right behind. Oh, but yeah, it's that. The scarpering.
But then it's the fucking naked people just following him around the house. And it's the one grinning in the cupboard is the mourner from the beginning who just kept grinning. And I'm like, why are you so creepy? Like,
yeah.
Sometimes smiling is creepy. Like, but also there was the scene, and this was my second biggest bugbear, was so many of the scenes were really stretched out, and that's Ari Aster's kind of thing, is like pregnant pauses. And then there was one bit where he went daytime, nighttime. And I was like, why couldn't you do that for half the film? Like, I'd have been paralyzed. But when he switches to night, there's naked cold people in the forest around the house.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's... Because, again, it's one of those things you think you can see something. And it's like, something's there.
Something looks odd, but I can't work out what it is.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't assume naked cultists quite yet, because I don't think we've seen them yet. And then all of a sudden these naked cultists are just in the house. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Did I miss that something? Like,
yeah. It's the fact there's one in the fucking, like, just sitting this. What was the mum's fucking in the corner of the room?
Well, yeah, because you're expecting her to jump. And then all of a sudden he looks the other way and he's just in the cupboard.
And then she just comes out a completely different direction. And you're like, what the fuck?
It was her banging on the loft made me really laugh. Not laugh, actually, it was quite creepy, but because when
was recreating Alex at school.
Yeah, but when Peter was in the attic and he could hear the banging, I was like, how the fuck is she doing that? And then when you saw it, I would just laugh because I was like, that is not what I was expecting, but it makes total sense. Like,
it's also fucking horrible.
So quickly.
Yeah, so what the fuck?
But it's almost like she's possessed.
Almost like she's possessed. But then how does she get into the attic? I know she's possessed, but can pavement just walk through walls? Like, how the fuck does she get in there?
Payment can do
what the fuck he wants.
He's the eighth king of hell, mate. He can.
But when they need to move her body later, it does that weird floaty thing where it looks like it's in the Barbie movie and it's just been moved along, and I couldn't take that fucking seriously. But somehow he just evaporates into the fucking loft.
That makes just no fucking sense.
It really looked fucking stupid. Like, I'm sorry, I know people are like, it's the greatest scary moment. No, it's fucking stupid.
For me, the cult bit ruined the entire movie.
Oh.
I don't like, I'm not a fan of it.
So the whole last 15 minutes.
Yeah, like the whole, like, I don't like the possession bit. I feel like it just goes off key. Like, I get it, but I also don't like it. I feel like there could have been a different ending. It would have been way better. I feel like the cult bit was a bit too messy. I'm not a fan of that part.
I just think.
He gets misnamed Charlie. It's like you're home.
No, because Charlie was in him. That's why he clicked.
Yeah, but I just wasn't a. I'm just not a fan of that ending, and that's what ruined it for me. But yeah,
I think it would have been so much better. Perfect. You thought it was perfect.
Yeah, I loved it.
I think it would have been better.
I love everything about this film, you know.
I think it would have been better if the mum had actually been like sleepwalking and killing off her family slowly.
I'm just thinking. Yeah, the mum sawing off her head with like a fucking fishing wire.
That was fucking terrifying. The sound effect on that was incredible. But okay, Katie, and why?
Toni Collette just giving the eyes, just like.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, Katie, why?
I mean, for all the reasons you guys are saying, like, that's why it was perfect. I mean,
and the dad on fire.
That was great. That was great. But I wish it was her that set him on fire, not some weird satanic demon. I wanted her.
This film is very much focused around grief and about family trauma. But the satanic cult and all of that comes into play right at the beginning. It's always been there.
I know. But it's just.
It just. Goes fucking AWOL, like not AWOL, but it goes mad at the end. But I don't know, I thought that shot was really beautiful because it was completely silent, there was no music, she was just lifted up. And it's one of those Midsummer moments where like everything's kind of done in this serene, calm music, and then you at the end and you see them all propped up and the house burns down. It really reminded me of that. Again, I know Hereditary came out before, but it just had that vibe to it. And it was kind of almost like something beautiful about it because the way it looked was beautiful and the treehouse looked amazing and the woods around it. And just the fact that now like Peter's body is being used as this fucking
hell.
Yeah, like, yeah. And all the rest of the family are dead. I mean, Peter's essentially dead, but like they're using his body. I just thought all of it was perfect, and it was always about being in this whole like cult was always there. It was just shadowed a little bit by grief and by trauma and all of that as well. I just thought it was perfectly done. Like everything about it, I think, especially the music, that's what Ari Aster does. He just puts all this calming, serene music in with it as well. And you just kind of think, what am I watching right now?
But for music, I could go fucking full nerd on. I'm not going to, though. But they talk about how, and they show him the photos of the god, devil, demigod thing, whatever it is, being summoned by trumpets. And they use trumpets right at the end to bring it all up. And it's like, oh, shit. Like, and it's it occurs for it as well, like the party crashing scene, like, that there's trumpets again, like it gets echoed around, and he really does smash it out of the music on this.
I think that's the thing. I think there are so many Easter eggs in this, and as you say, Katie, the cult was always there, but there's a lot of like Easter eggs. There's this one point where they go get their post, and then a flyer comes in that advertises the cult, but it's so subtle. It's almost too subtle that you're not... See, Charlie, you didn't even see it. Like, I only saw it because I literally was like, watched a thing where it was like, I need to see more Easter eggs, because I was like, there was definitely clues there. I haven't got time to find them all again. But I think the problem is they're almost too subtle that suddenly the ending, just as you say, it goes from 0 to 100 out of fucking nowhere. But the clues were kind of along the way. But at the same time, I think...
It wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough. And I think there was so much there about the family grief. There was so much real fear and horror within their family. And then all of a sudden there was a satanic cult attack. Oh, by the way, we've always been here. Grandma made a deal with the devil. Like, hang on a second, what? Like, I'm grieving my 13-year-old daughter. And I just think, and again, I think I said this the other day about The Witch, where I was like, they even needed, if they're going to do two things, you need more of both, or you need to pick a side. Because for me, it was very much, we're going to focus heavy on this and then slam this on at the end.
Yeah, like an afterthought type thing. We need to wrap it up somehow, because we've been putting it in there.
But it'd been peppered about, so it had been thought about, but it hadn't been shown off enough. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, big reveal. And it was like, hang on a second, what? Like,
I'm with you on that. Even without, because I didn't notice those Easter eggs. Even in fact, going down to like seeing people in the woods, I didn't really notice them. I know that something was up, but I didn't know there was like people watching them. I think I'm with you, and I think that is why, for me, it sort of takes away from the rest of the movie, which I was really enjoying.
But you say, Sal, that, like, you need some time for the grief, but, like, the whole reason Charlie is dead is because of the satanic cult.
True. I'll give you that.
Oh, she did also eat a chocolate pie, the chocolate cake.
Chocolate pie.
But yeah, she would have got to the hospital and been fine. In theory. I don't know. It was all just very...
I hear you. I know what you're saying.
I think I was just expecting to love it more. And I think that's what always kind of brings me down. I just don't. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
It's my fault, how I think I big these films up. And then you're like, what the fuck is this?
We've got to remain neutral now if we've seen a movie.
So for this one, you'd been careful of, because I think you knew it was a long movie, and you said about pregnant pauses. So you were like, I am worried.
Are you going to like this? I don't know.
And it just...
I do find it funny that you thought it was too long, because the first death is within
45 minutes before the first... Well, I know the first opening was a funeral, but 45 minutes.
Okay.
Does there have to be deaths in a horror film for it to be a horror?
No,
yes, we need some fucking gore.
And the thing is, as well, like a lot of films, it will be the last like half an hour that's explosive. But this one just felt like it was 15 minutes. And I was like, that's a really condensed explosion, considering they could have had naked, creepy cult people following them around way earlier. And it would have been way creepy. And just like hidden in the back. Oh, like, it's a full movie. It was like 2 hours, 10 minutes.
What?
Because I kept checking.
127 minutes, that's 2 hours.
Seven minutes. Like, no.
No, okay.
It's not a great sign that you're checking when it's over, that's for sure.
Yeah, because, well, again, I was like, I need to get out of the bath, and it feels like there's not a conclusion yet.
I'm turning into a prune. Come on, Annie.
Oh, that's fucking where you know that you've done a bath right, though.
What, when the film's still going? And I'm like, have I been in
it? No, when you're a prune. I mean, I could be in the bath for fucking hours, me.
No, because I'm not doing anything. That's why I have to watch a film while in the bath, because I have to stay in the bath to do the soak.
Oh.
So, because I'm getting old and my body's falling apart slowly. Not even slowly, like the day after I turned 30, my body rapidly declined.
I've still got another couple of months, and this week alone, I've lost my voice and also did my back in so much I couldn't actually get off the toilet at one point. My mum's come round my house.
30 next month, mate.
We're going to have to get you one of those railings that you have in older people's houses to get off the loop.
You know what, Charlie? I haven't got you a 30th birthday present yet, so you're giving me some ideas.
Zimmer frame. Nice.
I'm not going to lie, I was needing a Zimmer frame this week. Ideally one with some wheels on as well to make it easier. I was using my daughter's scooter to get around the ground floor of my house.
I know, just the thing you need. But yeah, it's fucking rough. So
No. Yeah. I hear you. I hear what you're saying, and I know it's not kind of for everyone, but I just think I love him, like, as a director and everything, the way he kind of does everything. It's sort of like, it doesn't really sit right with you. It's not like a normal horror film. It sort of makes you feel lots of different things, and it's just a different kind of horror. And I think he's really, like we were saying about Mike Flanagan for Gerald's Game, I think he's really introduced this kind of new version of horror, and I just love it, and I guess I just really get on with it, and I'm so excited to see what else he's going to do sort of in the future.
Just out of interest, have you seen Beau Is Afraid?
I have, yeah.
Well, is it along the same sort of style? Because I've seen The Strange Thing About the Johnsons.
Yeah.
And I can see where that's coming from within the last Hereditary and Midsommar. But I was wondering, because it's got Jekyll and Phoenix in, doesn't it? Both.
Yeah, Strange Thing About the Johnsons. Fuck me. I thought about that.
I mean, that was a ride and a half. Chantel will love it. It's only half an hour long.
Hell, if you want family fucking trauma, watch
it. It is fucking amazing. But Jesus Christ, it takes you on a ride. I had to watch, I think it was like 3 hours of cartoons after watching it, just to fry my mind and get it out of my system.
Perfect. That's why I'm watching when we finish this.
Yeah, definitely. You should, actually.
Honestly, it's fucking amazing, but it is like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck have I just watched?
Okay.
No, so Beau Is Afraid is quite a slightly sort of different vibe in a different film. It's not as kind of like direct horror as maybe like Midsommar or Hereditary is. It's still very intense and like scary in some ways, but it's also just, it's quite different, but you know it's Ari Aster doing it. Okay. It's weird. But it's definitely worth a watch, I reckon. I think Tell would fucking hate it because I think it's longer than, I think it's about 3 hours.
Yeah, I know. Let's probably look at
Why?
It might not be.
If it's getting to that long, just make a series. Make
it's 179 minutes.
That's too fucking long. That's 3 hours. At that point, make a mini series, because do you know what? I'll watch a mini series and leave me on a cliffhanger. I fucking love it. I'll come back for more.
Go. Strange Thing About the Johnsons for you, and I'll watch Beau Is Afraid. There we go.
Perfect.
I'll be begging for the next episode if you just did a bloody mini series. 3 of them, I'll watch them in a row, but I cannot watch a film that's 3 hours. Don't understand why, but that's just life.
If you guys can both watch those in our next recording, we can have a chat about them. We'll put some time aside and have a chat about both those films.
Nice.
Yes.
Just like 5 minutes, but
three films an episode now.
But it's got a mini in and it's got a fucking epic in there.
All right, well, we came to the end. That's fine. We've come to the end. One thing I was geeking about earlier was when I was looking up the description and some of the stuff around Hereditary and the SFX, is one of the most asked questions is Hereditary the scariest movie ever? And again, I would say no, but I agree with Katie. I'm going to be thinking about that lamppost scene for quite a while, and the piano string. However, looking at the SFX, because that does help me stop thinking about it, to be fair, because I think of it more of a that way rather than
a practical effect rather than
practical. Yeah, I wonder how's done. So
just I'm waiting till summer until the ants are out. It fucking creeps you out.
Lovely. Yeah, I know. That's what I'll be thinking about it. So I'm getting this from the Stan Winston School of Character Arts. And if anyone wants to pay for me to go there, I would very much appreciate it. But so they were looking at using prosthetics for Hereditary. So it was the prosthetic makeup designer is Steve Newburn. He's also worked on Suicide Squad, Flatliners, 12 Monkeys, the television series. So they do TV series. So they were responsible for the prosthetic work, and they also helped with sort of like the smaller injuries, like the broken nose, the split lip for Peter. But what they had to do,
he could do his own jaw.
He could do his own jaw. I love that fact. But they had to do an entire prosthetic gag for Toni Collette, because obviously she had to take off her neck with a piano wire. So that's like the whole cast where it gets put on so that they can do that. And even Charlie, so obviously the actress who played her, Millie Shapiro, I think I did the maths right. I think she was about 16 when she filmed this. I might be wrong because, again, maths is not my strong point. But she looks really, like, really cute in her, she's got the full body cast on. And then they obviously did a head cast as well. I'll share the pictures with you guys. I do want to put these on the Instagram. They are incredibly gory. So we may have to put a warning on them first in case people are like me and scrolling while they're at work. But they obviously did that, and then they had to, it was a collapsible in a skull, which we saw for a different film, Midsommar, of course, when they mallet on his head. So that it would pop back up and then kind of make it more and more disgusting as they go. So honestly, I don't know if you can see quite how grim they are, but consider this poor girl would have seen her own face absolutely
smashed up. She's like, you know what? I'm not going to be sticking my head out of the window anytime soon.
Well, literally.
Because I'm going to look like that.
I remember, though, as a kid getting told by my parents to get my head in because they were worried about the shit like this happening. So if I'd watched this as a child, it never would have been a problem. But they let, no, because my confusion was they let our dogs hang their heads out the window, and why could they do it and I couldn't? So clearly this was not an argument I was going to win. But anywho, so I'm going to read this because it'll be easier than me trying to put it in my own words. Tests were carried out in the makeup shop using a baseball bat to simulate the telephone pole's impact. The car was supposed to be mounted and there's supposed to be an animatronic puppet hit into the telephone pole. But because of various changes, it had to be done with a stunt performer driving the vehicle, a fully operational vehicle at 60 miles an hour. So basically the stunt had to happen as exactly it happened in the scene, and they had the prosthetic hanging out the window. Now, what's even more incredible is they did it. They did that in one take. And what they said was it actually, so the driver, he nailed it in the first times. Steve would also say that it looked fantastic, but they only used a few frames of it as it was a little too disturbing. So despite as disturbing as it was for us to watch, they only used a few frames, which is like less than seconds. And then just, so God knows what the real version looked like. They obviously also had to make other bodies for later in the film. So like the grandmas and the mums when they're headless and they're praying. But they were also, when it came to like the scarring and stuff, they handed that off to Greg Moon, who was the department head, and a key makeup artist, Abigail Spencer. But they also took on the responsibility of doing the miniatures because they were struggling to find a team to do that. And I don't know how much you guys, like, I looked up pictures of the miniatures because they were a little hard for me to see kind of watching in the film. Like, you could get the gist, but I wanted to see them closer. And there's one where, like, Annie's in bed breastfeeding her son, and her mother's trying, like, literally got her boob out trying to breastfeed the kid. Like, it shows you so much about, there's one where, like, the mum was watching the couple sleep, like Annie and her husband. So it's, I think the miniatures really do a lot to tell you more about the family and more about other bullshit going on that's happened in Annie's life. And sorry, I stumbled over my words a lot.
Because also tell, I think there's when, doesn't she say to Charlie, like, oh, you know, you were always her favourite.
Yes.
You know, when she wanted to feed, when I wanted to feed her, she always wanted to feed you. She wouldn't ever let me feed you. Which is like, so is that implying that Annie let the grandma breastfeed her?
I don't know if it was breastfeed or bottle feed. I'm not sure.
Which means she was getting her tit out in the.
Yeah.
Do you know what? The amount of stories I've read on Reddit, I wouldn't be surprised that there have been like mother-in-laws.
Also, going talking about the doll's house again, what they did with the cameras, they did film on set, but they also made for sets as well, so they could recreate that dollhouse feel between the actual live action sets and the dollhouse set, so it all felt like it was seamlessly one.
But this was my thing with it, because right at the beginning you see the dad, like it zooms into the dollhouse and the dad walks into the son's room, daughter's room.
Yeah.
So like, was it taking place in the dollhouse the whole time? Was this all just bullshit?
No. How do you know? It was happening.
How do we know?
I think that was kind of like a symbol of like the satanic cult, basically, like putting them in their place the whole time, sort of playing with them. Like they had control. Yeah, like they had control of that family the entire time. I think that was what it was kind of trying to show. Well, that's what I got from it anyway.
Okay. I'll take that.
Big brother's watching.
But what do I fucking know?
How are we doing? Would we survive? What are we trying to survive?
The satanic cult. Amen. Okay, how far along would you die in this?
Yeah, right?
I'm saying my name's Charlie. I'm surviving and I'm coming back, motherfuckers.
You're not surviving. You're getting placed into another body.
I'm still alive in spirit. That's all that matters.
Actually, Charlie, you're okay because you haven't got any brothers. So, like, you haven't got any male relatives for them to be like, that would be payment.
True. There we go.
You are also called Charlie, so.
I am the payment.
No.
Yeah. I'm coming back to haunt you, motherfuckers. Sit my head on top of a pigeon. Here we go. Let's go, lads.
As I think payment needs a Zimmer frame, I'm afraid.
Probably has a voice.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, this is a weird one. I'm not really sure what or how we're trying to survive.
I'm just going to say no. I mean, no fucking chance, really, is there? Everyone dies, unless you're part of the cult.
Would I accidentally join a satanic cult?
You know what, Tel? I love you, but fucking probably you would.
It's the sort of shit I'd accidentally do and be like, I'm not
you'd
sure. Start,
you'd be like, look, I'm free on a Wednesday evening. Sign me up. I've got a free evening. It's something else to do.
Hey, Charlie, I've got some new mates for you to meet. This is Beelzebub.
Yes, Lucifer.
But yeah,
oh, this is Lucifer. He prefers Lucy. It sounds like the thing I'd accidentally do.
Oh, looks like I've got a bit of speed dating to do with you, mate.
Oh dear. I don't really. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just dying. Tel's in the cult and Charlie's Charlie.
I am the rule of Earth now. Thank you very much.
Charlie dies but comes back in an unclaimed host because we don't know who it would be yet.
Yeah, we don't. There's no male in like blood in her family. Yeah, I don't know.
Unless it runs on your dad's side, and then you.
Yeah, it could be your dad.
Oh, fuck that.
We'll be in your dad's body.
Oh,
yeah,
dear.
No, thank you.
Yeah, that sounds
good. Anyway. Doesn't
sound great,
does it?
So, guys, what are we giving Hereditary Spookies out of 5? And what is your favourite spooky moment from Le Film? Charlie, I'll come to you.
My favourite spooky moment, I am going to say where right at the end where the mum runs across the room and you're like, what the fuck was that? Like, absolutely not. Like, yeah, no. I'm going to give it a 3.5 spookies. Just because, as I said all along, that last bit with the cult, I ain't a fan of it. The rest of it, absolutely beautiful. Toni Collette smashed it. Rest of them smashed it. Fucking Alex dislocating his jaw, smashed it. Like, yeah. So, well, you, Chantel, how do you? What was your spookies and how many spookies?
So my spooky moment, I'm going to go with the lamppost because how could you not? And I think I'm going to give us 2.5. Like,
oh my God.
I really like the SVX. There's definitely bits that have stuck with me, but I just don't think it lives up to the fucking hype.
Oh, like, my God.
Can people stop hyping up horror movies that don't deserve it? Also, it's too fucking long. Like,
Katie's face is a picture, as you said.
I know. That. I feel like we should have gone to Katie first. I'm going to come to Katie now. Are you just giving it a 5 out of 5?
Jesus fuck.
Here to disappoint.
Okay. So my spooky moment is gonna be when she's in the corner and Peter wakes up and she's in the corner, because I didn't see that when I first watched it, and it was such a like a little hidden gem. Yeah, it's just horrible. That'll be my spooky moment, and I'm giving this 5 spooks out of 5.
Oh, fuck it.
It's a perfect horror film. It's one of my favourites, like, favourite modern horror film to me. I think it's one of the scariest horror films I've ever seen. And it just does a lot to me. It does a lot to me mentally, man. So I think it's so effective. So, yeah, 5 for me.
I find horror movies now more effective if I wasn't bored.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I can't, yeah. I'm just having a look at what we've got next week to be like, is there ever going to be a week?
I respect your opinion, Tal.
I respect.
I don't. And I rated it down, but I don't respect a fucking 2. What was it? 2.5?
2.5. Like, it's halfway there.
Eight.
No.
It's halfway there. I don't know. I'd watch it again. And the thing is, I may watch it again and go, do you know what? I was wrong. But right now, I'm sticking with what I've said. But that was our Hereditary episode. So check us out next week and check us out on all the socials to see what our next film is going to be. And join us again for more chaos and me disappointing Katie. She's just staring off into space now because the love is gone.
She's given up.
She really has.
Bye-bye.
Don't die.
Get hit by a lamppost.
Yeah. Just keep all limbs in cars, please.
Keep your arms and legs inside the vehicle at all times.
It's not over because that bitch is dead.
Let's delve into that a bit deeper.
I'm going to be like the peacekeeper between you two tonight.
Yeah,
fuck with the original.
Yeah, don't fuck with the original.